Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. Of course, my name is still Paul Madat. I hope everybody's doing all right, all things considered. Thanks very much for being here. Today, I have Angie Barnes. She is Executive Vice President of Sales, coming to us from a company called Navco in Fullerton, California. Angie, how are things in Cali?
Oh, well, you know, actually, we're getting a very rare cold front, which, you know, for Cali, cold front means, you know, high 60s versus, 70s or 80s. So, you'll walk around in California and see people with winter coats on in the next day or two, which looks a little crazy. But in general, it's as crazy as it always is.
Well, as a guy who lives in Toronto and experiences the four seasons of what the year brings us, right now we're actually experiencing your hot spell. I think it's about 65 out today, which in November here, it's usually in, I mean, maybe it might be high 30s at this time of the year, but I took my son to school today in just a vest. It was great. So he's enjoying it.
I love it. Yeah.
Angie, say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro.
Sure. I'm Angie Barnes. I am, as Paul said, the EVP of sales for Navco. I've been with the company for 15 years and I live in Southern California. I'm a transplant, as I would say. I've only been out here for about 3 years, was in Texas for 30 years. So you may catch a y'all in there. It always comes out. And but I love California. I wanted to live by the beach and that was my goal. And so that's where I live, in Southern California. I have a son who is a senior at Pepperdine University. He's going to be graduating in May, so which is exciting. And he's off to New York City in June, which going from Malibu, California to New York City, as I've told him, you know, it's quite the life. So all good and excited about it.
Well, I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. You might drop a couple y'alls, and me being Canadian, I might drop a couple A's. Who knows, right? So we'll have some fun with it. So, Angie, thanks again for being here. As you know, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters, and that really is driven from my belief that nothing is really given to any of us, and we all have different careers and paths and big decisions and forks in the road. And knowing a little bit about your background, I'm looking forward to you share your story. You ready to roll here?
I'm ready.
Okay, so let's go back to the early 90s. I know you went to Drake University and Texas State University, and you have a background in journalism and advertising. When you finished your college years, what did you think you'd be doing? Did you have a vision back then?
Yeah, it's funny. I have a joke, Paul, that I had a bigger staff in college than I've had since. So I actually, I think it was my junior year, you know, when you're kind of going through, what do I want to really do besides enjoy college? And there was an ad rep job at the newspaper for the college. And at the time, it was a 2-time-a-week college newspaper. And I was like, well, you know, I need to make some extra money. And so I applied had a territory they gave me at the time. And I would literally kind of get dressed up, hop on the school transit bus, and go sell advertising for the local college newspaper. And I loved it. And fortunately, within about 3 to 4 months, I ended up popping up to being the advertising director. And we just grew. We had to make money for the paper basically to publish. So however much advertising revenue we got, that's how big the paper was. So It was a lot of fun. I employed reps, I employed creative people, and I tell people it was the best job I could have without actually being out of college, in college. So
awesome. And so what was your first job, post-college?
Well, I ended up going into advertising right out of college. I was a ad rep for short stint for some advertising. There were trade magazines. One was Texas Medicine at the time, and the other one was Independent Bankers. And it was really a phone selling ad job is what I did. And then I ended up landing at Independent Bankers as a full-time advertising director, which, you know, it's all sales, you know, advertising and selling advertising is all sales. So, and then I got married about a year into that job. And I was living in Austin at the time, Paul, which everybody I feel like knows Austin, Texas these days. Ended up moving to San Antonio when I got married and wasn't sure what I was going to do at the time. So,
well, you know, I've been to Texas a few times and I know that Austin and San Antonio geographically are not that far, a few hour drive here and there, but two different cities, I imagine, in terms of the culture and a lot of government in Austin, I imagine, versus San Antonio. And so was that a big shift for you as you're, you know, newlyweds and, you know, trying to find your way in this new city, even though you're still in Texas?
Oh, yeah, for sure. As a matter of fact, Austin is the fun city in Texas. I don't care what anybody says. It is where you want to live after college. You know, it's got the, yeah, absolutely, hook 'em horns. It is outdoorsy. It's why everybody in California moves to Austin, I swear, because there's a lot of elements of music scene, young people. It's just a fun place to live. Now, San Antonio is a great place to raise kids. It's not the funnest town in America, even though people know it a lot of times by the Riverwalk. But I would say better to raise kids, not necessarily to be, you know, young and fun. So it was a transition mentally as well. So,
okay. So after, but how long were you at Independent Bankers of Texas?
I was there for about 2 years.
Okay. And what was next?
I took off about 3 months and candidly was married. So I married a CEO of his own growing company. And my husband was growing his own company. So this is where my story gets kind of interesting, because I was kind of like, now, wait a minute. I thought I was going to be a CEO someday. And I married one. You know, my job was considered to be, I would say, not as important. So, but it was important to me personally. I still had all that drive. And so I'm like, I got to do something. And at the time, Brinks Incorporated, everybody, I think most of people know Brinks. If you think about armored trucks, I had had them as a sponsor at Independent Bankers on a bank robbery tour, believe it or not. They were our sponsor. Yeah. It's the craziest thing to think Brinks was sponsoring a bank robbery tour, but they did. And I connected with the senior VP at the time. And he said, if you ever leave, call me. All right. I would love to hire you. And so I was like, I don't know what I would be doing at Brinks, but I'm going to call him. And so I ended up at Brinks, and you know, it was a phenomenal opportunity from a sales side, because they were launching a brand new product at the time. So,
you know, I'm curious about Brinks, because I know Brinks to be a very dynamic company. They're a client of ours. And so we've done some work with them. Yeah. I know that I'm in Canada and the US. But I also know that when you work for a company that has the brand strength that Brinks has, kind of like I had at Xerox, in some circles, you know, people would hear I work at Xerox and, oh, you sell copiers. That's kind of boring. And Brinks is security and money, and it's almost like it doesn't really wow a lot of people, but I know them to be, there's a whole lot more that they do, that it's not, you know, a dry environment. So did you have that story in your head about Brinks before you joined there? And then did it change in terms of what this company really does and the people that work there once you got behind the firewall?
Oh yeah. Cause it was like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I'm going to sell armored car services. I'm like, it's just when you grow up, you're like, I don't want to grow up and sell armored car services. And again, I do love Brinks still. They're actually one of my customers as well still at NAFCO. But I was there for about 3 months, and it was interesting because my job was they hired me to grow the business in the San Antonio market from an armored car. And I had a branch manager that he was like, I don't want to grow the business. I'm happy. I don't want to do anything. And I had to really partner with him if I was to be successful. And for some reason, the higher ups realized, listen, she's good. This isn't going to work for her. We need to shift her into a new role. And they had a brand new product at the time. And it's actually was a patent product called CompuSafe. It's electronic cash safes that now you walk into almost every C store in the country, Taco Bell, whatever, and you watch their money actually goes below the counter and goes right into, I call it an ATM in reverse.
Yeah.
At the time, I sold the first four of them out there in existence in Atlanta to Chevron. And I tease, I'm in a museum. And I'm like, you know, I don't know anybody wants to ever be in a museum, but I was on the front cover of the first brochure. And they paid me, I think, $10 to be on the brochure, Paul. So, it was my claim to fame. So, anyway.
Now, do you still have that brochure?
I do.
All right.
Yeah, I do. And but it was a phenomenal experience. So the focus of the company at the time was to deal with all the large oil companies. So the Exxons, the Mobils, the Valeros.
Texas, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And all over the country. So I was bopping all over meeting with all the large oil companies to get them to adopt a brand new way of thinking of handling cash. So it was C-suite, and it was actually a pretty high profile opportunity.
Now, you mentioned 3 months, but the way you're speaking, it sounds like you were there longer than 3 months.
Oh, I mean, 3 months in that role.
And in that role.
It brings, I was actually there for 10 years.
10 years. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I ended up taking that product and building about a $40 million a year portfolio for the company. And, today it's still a, you know, phenomenal product for them. And it was the best opportunity I could have had, really, because it taught me how to deal with a lot of different people. So from a sales perspective, one of the things I know I teach and coach my people is, you think you're dealing with one guy and he's the guy and I'm going to sell that person. But what you really have to realize when you get to that level is there's six people you have to convince to make sure everybody's on the same page. And so being young, at the time I was only like 24, I learned to work, you know, the CFO, the operations, you know, COO, and learned how to really build an ROI, which was very valuable at the time.
You know, Angie, I want to ask you about the decision and what was behind it in terms of your decision to, what were the factors in terms of why you moved on from Brinks? Because I worked at Xerox for the better part of 10 years as well. Big brand, global presence, you know, lots of runway with the company and so on. But when I decided to move on, it was to start my own, you know, training company. So I wanted to be self-employed. I wanted to do my own thing. I didn't move on to go to another company and be an employee somewhere else. And I was also single at the time. I was unmarried, didn't have any kids. So my decision to move on, while it was by no means a wake up one morning and just do this, it was a long thought. I probably had been noodling it for the better part of a year before I finally decided to do it. You know, what was behind your decision to move on from Brinks? Was it their call? Was it your call? Was it an arduous process? Was it, no, we got to do this now? What was it like, you know, after 10 years, you know, working for the same organization?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I love Brinks. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people that will retire with Brinks. It's the kind of company you would retire from because they are, I would call, the old school company where they really did treat you right. But it also was not a company that rewarded you greatly. I tell people, and I'm hiring salespeople all the time, listen, if I would have started at my company now when I was the age at Brinks, I'd be sitting on an island drinking mojitos right now because, you know, and that's okay. They just were not a huge rewarding on sales. Sales were, you know, they were capped and then they were capped differently. It was a different business model. And again, it's not a reflection on Brinks. It's just how they did, but yet a lot of stability, not a lot of salespeople in and out, but your high producers were never hugely rewarded. So that was part of it. But also, Paul, you know, one of the things I talked to a lot of women on is that I had a young son at the time and I had gone through a divorce, I was married for about 9 years. And again, very successful ex-husband, kept working the whole time. Brinks was very good about allowing me to have a home office back when a lot of people didn't have home offices. And I had a young son. And so I was like, you know, I would love to go out and change the world, but right now I need stability. And I need to be somewhere close at home to be able to pick him up and take him to school and all those other things. And so NAVCO came knocking on my door one day at a trade show and basically said, hey, you know, I don't know if you're interested in this, but we'd love to talk to you. And at the time I was like, oh, I'm never leaving Brinks. I love them. I built the business. I'm a little bit on the ability to coast for a while with not a whole lot of challenge, but I was like, you know, I should probably look at it. And it was a tough decision. And honestly, Paul, I prayed about it. I'm a faithful person and I prayed about it. And I'm a big believer in life, doors open and doors close for reasons. So that door seemed to be really opening. And of course, then I didn't know why. Now I look back and I go, oh my gosh, yeah. It was best decision I've ever made. So.
Well, I really appreciate your transparency regarding what it was like for you at the time, because look, the numbers don't lie. Half the audience listening to this went through a divorce, either themselves or their parents or something else. And I certainly did. And, my parents got divorced when I was 11. And so that was hard for me at the time, because I was old enough to know what was going on, but I was still a kid. And then, so here you are now realizing, okay, so my marriage is no longer working for me. You're responsible for this boy and you've got to take care of him. And so a number of different factors that are going on, in addition to it costs money every day just to wake up. So I've got to pay the bills and I've got to survive. And Brinks, to your point, a great company. But after 10 years, you realized you didn't want to be there for the next 10 years. And so then NAVCO came calling. Was that a long process for you to, I know you said you met them at a trade show, but was it a long interview process? Was it pretty quickly? Did you go in as an individual contributor? Did you go right into a leader? What happened with your conversion into NAVCO?
That's a good question. They wanted to hire me as an individual contributor. The one thing that I did not want to do, Paul, and I was very emphatic about, is I would not go with a competitor of Brinks. I was a big believer that, listen, I have been selling this product with my heart, soul for 10 years. The last thing I'm going to do is now go to those same customers and be like, hey, listen, everything I said, just let that go. I didn't really mean any of it, right?
Well, if you were going to do that, get into politics, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could, definitely. So I was like, and by the way, financially, that would have been the best place for me to go, because the competitors at the time would have loved to have grabbed me to potentially grab other customers. And I was like, I won't do it. So NAVCO was a complementary product. We sell physical security versus what Brinks does. And so I went in as a business development manager, and that's kind of where, and for the oil industry and some of the retail industry, which I had been focused on at Brinks. So, as much as they won't tell you today, and I love the president of my company, he wanted to hire me because he wanted my contacts at the time. And I would hire someone today for the same reason, he wanted to be able to access my ability to talk to the Chevrons of the world and all the different people. And he was wonderful. And so he brought me on as a business development person, and it allowed me to call on some of those similar customers, but with a different story. And as I always tell people, you can give them a different story. There may be a need, there may not be a need, but they will take your call. They will let you in the door. Whether you have something to offer them is another question. And so it was a good opportunity for me to pivot a little bit in a different industry.
Yeah, I fully respect that. And even your comment regarding not wanting to go to the other side after 10 years of Brinks, I get that as well, because you, for the lack of a better term, you become brainwashed into, this is our value prop. I could have never have worked from Xerox to a competitor, because I spent so many years selling against them. That, to your point, I almost felt like, well, then to what you just said, it would have been, so wait a second, yesterday you were telling me that this wasn't as good, now all of a sudden it's okay. And so I kind of get that. Was it an easy transition for you at NAVCO after selling the Brinks way for so many years, or was it a harder challenge than you thought to kind of NAVCO it, once you're behind there?
That's a good question. I think great salespeople. My dad sold refrigerators, and he was an appliance guy for years, went door to door to dealers. My mom was in the music business, sold pianos and organs for years. And it was all, I think we just innately know how to deal with people. It's what are we selling is how we develop the value prop of what we're selling, If you believe, and you got to believe in it. That's the other thing. I believed in NAVCO. That was another huge reason I believed in Brinks. I believed in what I sold. And so I would say not necessarily the NAVCO, but believing and understanding the value of what we brought was something that once I learned that, it was easy. And then working with the other sales team. So I was a little bit of an outsider at NAVCO when I first came. So it was figuring out how to not be a from a business dev side, not be a competitor, but be more of a support person to help them get more business.
And you've been at role. Mm-hmm. And you've been at NAVCO for how many years now?
15.
So 15 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if I heard you correctly earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that you're still newer to California. Is it only been a couple of years that you've been to California? Okay. What was that a NAVCO initiated conversation? Did they want somebody in California, or did you say from a lifestyle perspective, I want you to move me here and here's why?
Yeah. Again, it goes back to my sweet son, who is the light of my life. I had run the West out of Texas for the company for years. So literally he was home Monday, Tuesday, because I shared custody with his dad. Because I shared custody with his dad, I would literally be home every Monday, Tuesday, but Wednesday morning, I would be on a plane at 5 a.m. flying out to California, to Seattle, to wherever. So I commuted for years until I knew that he would graduate, then I would eventually try to come out to California. Now, thankfully, he chose Pepperdine, which is in Malibu. So again, I felt like, again, the stars aligned, doors were open for me to move to California for not only the company, but also to be close to him for at least another 4 years. I chased him, as he would say, but I didn't really chase him. So.
And you've been happy with your move in SoCal?
Yeah. I mean, it's a different Texas and California could not be more different sometimes. Right. I mean, and I'm sure you've been here. It's, I think the thing was, I love the ocean. So every time I came out to California, I stayed by the ocean. I love the ocean, living at the coast. It's a very different kind of a different microclimate area and micro people, you know, it's a very, you know, I live in a very surf town, lots of surfers. I get up in the morning going to work and I'm all dressed up and I pass a guy with the surfboards doing his dawn patrol, ready to go out there and hit the waves. So, but in Texas, I love the people. You know, Texas people they're just good people. So it was getting an adjustment of, where California is a lot of blend of a lot of people. I think Texas has a little bit more. I was born and raised, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm not leaving forever. So.
And so, Angie, how have you managed 2020 in a virtual environment, still newer to where you live? Are there team members that you've hired you haven't even met yet? What's it been like for you, certainly in the last 8 to 9 months?
Well, we've been a little bit fortunate because we're an essential business. So on the security side. So I actually been going into the office 4 days a week. I commute, it's about 35, 40 minutes from my house. I leave very early. I'm an early riser. So I'm out the door by 5:30 in the morning. And, we've done amazingly well. And I would say it's on the strength of, our salespeople, getting them to have a different mindset and to think through how to deal with adversity with an opportunity without being, we call it an ambulance chaser in the world that we are today. So I've been going to the office 4 days a week and keeping my routine going. And a lot of my team is remote, sales. So, my life hasn't changed as much, but, more of them have changed and not being on a plane. Oh my gosh. I have the gates at DFW memorized. I have the gates at New York LaGuardia memorized. I mean, people always used to ask me, Andy, I like your earrings. And I'd say, I got them at DFW. Because I do my shopping at the airports. I live there. So that's been the biggest change, is just not being on an airplane, 2-3 days a week minimum.
Yeah. My wife was asking me a similar question because prior to the middle of March, when the world, shut down for your current state, I was on a plane often. It would be, 60, 70 flights a year. It was, I got to know the Toronto Pearson Airport very well. And she asked me over, actually, what's today? Friday? It was actually just past last weekend. She asked me, do you miss flying? And I said, not anymore, because I've kind of, grown into what current state is like right now. But initially I said I did, because I got used to a certain pattern. And she said, you know, did you have a routine? And I said, oh yeah. Mm. I said, I got to know, I knew where the gates were. I knew where I'd line up for global entry. I knew where I'd have a routine where I would have my shoes shined at the airport. I'd usually get a manicure at the airport. I got to know the people. I'd get into the lounge early. Like I was just a pattern of behavior. I just got to know exactly where I was because I was there so often, and then now it's gone. So, but I'm glad to hear that, you know, all things considered, you know, your business is strong and you're navigating it personally very well. And I've had so much fun speaking to you. I want to close with this, Angie. I always like to ask anybody who's a guest on the podcast, for your foundation, anything that has served you well up until this point in your life, whether it be professionally, personally, or both, you know, what's been your foundation as a baseline?
You know, since we touched on it, you know, there's a lot of different things. You know, again, I think I mentioned my faith has been huge for me, and just in general, and trusting that doors open, doors closed for reasons, you know, really trusting that. But I would say also in business, it's integrity, you know, say what you do, do what you say, always, you know, be that person that stands behind what you're doing. And I feel like I've lived that my life. And that has resonated in a business world where you create that trust and that foundation. And personally, you know, I can look at myself in the mirror at night knowing I've done the right things, and you know, I continue to try to do the right now. I fail, you know, again. Mm. But I get right back up and try to do it better again the next day. So I would say the integrity side, as well as, like you said, my continued faith to know that everything happens for a reason. Even 2020, yeah. Even 2020, as hard as it is right now to understand it, but 2020 is a good test of that.
I'm with you on that one as well. Angie, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thanks for freeing up the time here.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate the time.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, let's wrap another episode up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We are online at sellingisimple.com. We'll catch you again next week. And of course, be safe, everybody.